Welcome to the Renewables Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams in the renewable sector. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent across the continuum from concept through commercialization and beyond in areas like energy storage, electric vehicles, hydrogen, solar, wind, and more. Here's your co-hosts, Mitch Robbins and Adam Soppy.
All right. Welcome back to another Renewables Talent Lab. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Soppy. Very excited to have with us Dr. Steve Letender. A lot to cover, so I'll reference my notes here. Dr. Letender is a regulatory analyst and policy professional with over 25 years of experience specializing in the value of distributed energy resources and the grid of the future. So a lot there. Obviously, that's a hot topic and something we're very interested in here. Steve holds a master's degree in economics from Binghamton, as well as a doctorate in energy policy from the University of Delaware. Dr. Letender currently serves as Fermata Energy's Senior Director of Regulatory Affairs. At Fermata Energy, he works to promote policies, regulations, and wholesale market reforms that really unlock the value that V2G offers to the grid as well as to the customers. He's also worked collaboratively with numerous organizations, including Pacific Northwest, National Laboratory, NREL, New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, California Air Resources Board, Green Mountain Power, Smart Electric Power Alliance, among others. Dr. Letender has published over 50, that's not a typo, you're not mishearing that, 50 technical reports and articles, which have been featured in numerous leading energy journals, including the Electricity Journal, Public Utilities Fortnightly, Solar Today, Transportation Research, as well as Energy Policy. This includes the publication of the seminal article on V2G titled Electric Vehicles as a New Power Source for Electric Utilities. And that was, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, with Dr. Willett Kempton. Hopefully I'm pronouncing Dr. Kempton's name correctly. You have prepared direct testimony and technical comments for numerous utility commissions, including those in New York, Michigan, Massachusetts, California, Maryland, and PA and Pennsylvania. So a lot there. I'll have to catch my breath. Let me know if I missed anything. And then if you would, please get us up to speed with all of the cool stuff you're doing with Fermata Energy.
Thanks, Adam. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. And appreciate the generous introduction. And again, glad to be here to talk about the work that I'm doing at Fermata Energy and also just kind of the bigger picture about how the grid has evolved over my career and where we kind of see things going and the role of what we call at Fermata Energy, vehicle to X or vehicle to everything. So Fermata Energy is a company that was started quite a few years ago, I guess maybe 10 years ago. In the early days, the founders, David Slutsky and John Wheeler, were really excited about this idea of transportation electrification, moving from internal combustion engines to electric vehicles. And electric vehicles obviously are what we call big batteries on wheels. So these are big batteries that, you know, are used primarily for driving, for mobility purposes. And they read some of the early work that I did and others on this vehicle-to-grid technology, which thinks about EVs a little differently, thinks about them not only as driving people from point A to point B, but also having these electric vehicles become an integrated part of the electric system through vehicle-to-grid technology. So what this is the EVs, the vehicles, it seems when you're on the highway that everyone's in their cars all at once, but the reality is we're all only driving our cars maybe 4 or 5% of the time. 95% of the time, our cars are parked either, you know, in at our office location, at our homes. A lot of us that work remotely from home, for me as an example, my car is parked in my garage, you know, for most hours of the day. And if you can plug those EVs into what we call bidirectional chargers, then that allows those EVs to become an integrated part of the electric grid. And there's an interest in this because the grid needs more energy storage. It needs more flexibility. So Fermata Energy was really on the leading edge of building the technology and deploying vehicle-to-grid systems across the United States Still very much early days in this technology, but Fermata Energy is one of the leading companies. We've got several dozen projects across the country where we're using bidirectional cars, EVs with bidirectional chargers, and we're demonstrating the real value and the opportunity for EVs to become a critical and important part of an evolving grid system over time.
That's amazing. This is really interesting. And we've talked offline a little bit, but I didn't know the extent of what you guys are doing. This is really exciting. And like you, I work from home. Our EV is usually in the garage or charging or my wife will drive it too, but it's not bidirectional. And I've talked with some friends about that too, I think one upsell for folks to consider that. I've seen this recently, whether it's a marketing play or if it's real, like, hey, buy an EV, let's say buy an electric truck. That can possibly serve as a generator for 2 or 3 days worth of power when, we're seeing these big storms or lightning hits something or there's the interconnectedness is a whole thing, but there's definitely, we have a huge need of more storage. And it sounds like you guys are offering that solution. So that's amazing. And then we can, jump in. I know centralized versus the decentralized structure is very topical as well. Could you maybe, as a subject matter expert, could you maybe explain to myself and to the audience the difference between a centralized grid architecture and that of a distributed grid architecture?
Yeah, no, happy to. And that's, so really, I think the way I would kind of approach that is really just talk about kind of my interests in my career, my academic training, which really over the past 30 years kind of tracks what's been happening with the electric system. And it does really build on this idea of where we are today with a centralized electric grid to we've made a lot of progress from a centralized to more distributed grid. And then ultimately, I'm of the view that vehicle-to-grid technology is going to be the ultimate manifestation of this transition to a more distributed architecture. But to get to that, let me just start by saying kind of how I got into the energy field. As you noted, I went to Binghamton University in upstate New York and received a master's degree in economics. This was in the early 1990s, so this was a while ago. And my first job in the energy field was working as an economist, a utility economist. We were looking at electric utility companies. And at the time, utility companies were investing in energy efficiency, helping their customers use less energy, which I know seems somewhat counterintuitive. Why would utilities encourage their customers to use less of the product that they manufacture and sell? Produce and sell. But it was largely driven by, an understanding that we could either build more power plants or we could help our customers save electricity and not have to build those power plants. So there's real value for the utilities and for their customers if rather than building new power plants that they help their customers be more efficient. And this was, again, back in the early 90s, and this was a topic of called energy efficiency or demand side management. And so I started my career in the energy field in that space. When I was at Binghamton doing economics, I was thinking I was going to do international work. I had an interest in international economics, but I ended up landing my first job in the energy field. And that really kind of introduced me to the whole grid and how it's structured and how things may evolve over time. So when I was working as a utility economist, I kind of began to understand the grid and the challenges that we face. And so what we do, what we were doing then, and we're still largely do today, is we produce power in large factories, power plants. They're out in the countryside, or they're large hydro plants, up in Niagara Falls and upstate New York and elsewhere. And then we deliver that power at great distance, hundreds of miles from where it's produced to where it's going to be consumed. So while I was working, I was down in North Carolina at the Research Triangle Institute as a utility economist. I started reading some work by a famous physicist, Amory Lovins, who founded the Rocky Mountain Institute, which has done a lot of great research and analysis on energy in many, many different sectors. And he had this vision back in the 70s around what he called soft energy paths versus hard energy paths. And hard were more autocratic, more centralized, and the soft energy paths were, though, more distributed, more democratized. And so that was kind of conceptually really got me excited and interested in continuing my education, which led me to go to the University of Delaware, where I was working with a team that's got the Center for Energy and Environmental Policy, and I was funded by the U.S. Department of Energy to do work on distributed solar. So this was kind of the first kind of iteration from this centralized to a more distributed grid as people started to think about putting solar on their rooftops, on garages, on and fields and neighborhoods, etc. So I took what Amory Lovins had thought about conceptually, and as a graduate student of the University of Delaware, I actually started to do the analysis and think about, well, what's the value? What's the economics of moving more towards a distributed system where you're actually producing energy where it's being consumed, on buildings, on homes, in neighborhoods, things of that sort. So at the University of Delaware, I was, again, funded by the U.S. Department of Energy, and this was in the early, again, in the mid-90s, and people were saying, well, why would you put solar on your roof? It's too expensive. You've got all this cheap energy that's coming from, you know, these large power plants at great distance. But we found that there was some compelling value that wasn't really understood or recognized. And so the work I was doing at the University of Delaware, my PhD, was to help understand what that value is of a distributed grid, moving from centralized large power production to decentralized local energy generation. So that's go ahead.
Sorry, Gary. No, I was just saying, this is really fascinating, and I've always, and maybe this could be another show, because there's probably a lot to unpack, but working as an economist, a utility economist, I've always felt like part of our problem is utilities are disincentivized to provide cheaper energy, let alone it's green. Hey, we've got energy on the sidelines. If you can give us interconnectedness, we're going to help serve everyone. Like, I think the power lines, I've researched that recently where, I mean, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the technology we're using is from like 1908 or something. So then it's like, well, there are ways to make it more than 2x more efficient. But if I'm a utility company, I'm going, well, why am I investing $1 million in R&D? I've already got these guaranteed contracts. I'm not incentivized to go out and invest in the infrastructure to make it more efficient and then to sell more energy at a lower cost. So it's like, well, gosh, we need to figure out how that works before we can get storage and then get things back. And again, that's probably, I'm taking this off topic, but that's really fascinating to me. And perhaps we can come back on here and elaborate further. It sounds to me, though, you're definitely believing the future grid is going to be highly distributed versus centralized. What do you think goes into that equation?
Yeah, no, happy to, but just even before I get to that, I just respond a little bit to what you said. You know, the grid is a very complex machine. I think someone was famously said that the electric grid is the most complex machine that humans have ever built or designed. And so it really is this network of power generation stations. It's large transmission towers, which deliver the energy to the distribution system. And then the voltage is stepped down and the distribution system delivers the power to homes and businesses. And then we consume that power, on a daily, hourly, every second of the day, we're consuming electricity. It's become so vital to our economy. You think of the digital age, like without electricity, all of this technology, computers and AI technology and information technology, the internet is made possible by having this very reliable, consistent flow of electricity. And it is this product which is challenging. It's the ultimate just-in-time product. Like, energy is produced and consumed at the same time, essentially. It's really difficult to store electrical energy, although there's been a lot of improvements in the technology that's been designed address this. And it also is kind of gets to your question about the utility incentives, and it is a monopoly. The poles and wires in particular are owned by a single company, and it just doesn't make sense to have multiple companies stringing transmission and distribution lines. There is this kind of monopoly structure. And what comes with the monopoly is regulation. Utilities are highly regulated entities. And you're right, if they don't have proper incentives to be more efficient or to support the transition to a clean energy future, it does require those regulators to require and impose on utilities that they must do certain things if they want to continue to serve in this this role as a monopoly provider of a critical service for the grid. So kind of back to your question about, like, you know, this, what goes into this distributed grid, like, we are still very much a centralized system. Most of the energy that's produced and consumed is in centralized, although you've seen just in my career over the past 30 plus years, much more distributed solar and other resources on the grid. And that was driven in part by regulation and public policy, but also just in part in terms of pure economics. If you back in the early 1900s, you built a bigger power plant, the energy became less expensive per unit. And that's called economies of scale. So bigger power plants, cheaper electricity, and then you deliver that electricity to consumers. And as it gets cheaper, they're going to buy more appliances and use more. And it really kind of creates this cycle of efficiency, of lower cost, more consumption. But that kind of economics kind of peaked in the early 90s. So if you built a bigger power plant, it didn't necessarily mean that you're going to get lower electricity. So now we're in an era of pure economics, which are suggesting that a decentralized architecture based on new technology, based on solar energy storage, other technologies, distributed wind, smaller gas turbines. So we have already seen in the past 20 years this transition from centralized to more distributed resources, gas generators and rooftop solar and solar in fields and neighborhoods. And it's not only driven by regulation and public policy, but also driven by pure economics. When you think about economies of scale in power production, when you think about solar and batteries, we're thinking about economies of scale in manufacturing. The more solar panels you manufacture, the lower the cost. The more batteries you manufacture, the lower the cost. So that even makes those resources even more competitive and preferred relative to the traditional ways that we have generated electricity in the past. So it really is an interesting dynamic around economic scale and efficiency that is driving this transition to a more decentralized energy production paradigm.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, it sounds like there's a diminishing return at some point. So we're trying to play in that, you know, that fine balance there. And you know way better than I do, but it seems like we as Americans are maybe disadvantaged in terms of our grid because it's older. It's still very new, but in terms of some European countries where they're building it real time, they have an advantage because they can make it where they want it and how they want it. And I'm hearing these crazy stories of solar panels built into the concrete or the road itself, and that's shooting energy back up into EVs. And I don't know what's science fiction and what's plausible, but it's fascinating to me that you are really on the cutting edge. Now, if you look at it and go, okay, I can kind of see how this is playing out. Well, for you though, you were seeing around corners, you know, 25, 30 years ago. What really got you interested in the energy space and kind of vehicle to grid technology to start
with? Yeah, no, I appreciate the question, Adam. That's a great question. It really, you know, I grew up in upstate New York, you know, really enjoyed being in nature. And so I've always have had really a strong affinity and commitment to environmental stewardship. So that really, when I was working years ago as a utility economist, I learned about, you know, how do we make electricity? It's largely back in the 90s was made from coal. And coal was over 50% of our electric generation portfolio. Now it's declined significantly since then, but it still is a part of our energy system. And now today we rely more heavily on natural gas, which is cleaner than coal, but still, you know, has significant greenhouse gas emissions. So really what kind of got me excited about the distributed grid and vehicle to grid technology is the opportunity to decarbonize, to reduce the amount of dirty polluting resources that we use and transition to a cleaner, less polluting framework, which I think the distributed utility concept really brings us towards local, cleaner generation. And that really has been kind of the motivation for my life work and my career is to help bring about understanding and knowledge about the value of distributed resources, not only around economic efficiencies, but also around the environment and the benefits that we can see from addressing, obviously, climate change is the issue of our time. And it is clear to me that a more distributed renewable grid is where we need to go. And I'm not alone in that. If you think about what's happened in terms of public policy, there are over a dozen states across the United States that have committed to having 100% clean energy futures. So states like New York State and Massachusetts and California and Maryland and Michigan, they've all said climate change is real. We have to address this. We're going to commit to, as a state, to achieving carbon neutrality or zero carbon energy by, say, 2030 or 2040 or 2050. So there really is, you know, this convergence of forces, public policy, of technology, of economics that are driving us to this clean energy future. And that really was, back to your question, was my motivation was to really take my expertise and my knowledge and help be part of the understanding and what is it going to take from technology, policy, and regulation to bring about this clean energy future.
That's amazing, and amazing legacy that you're paying forward. So that thank you for all the work that you're doing, the important work you're doing. And I guess that's maybe a lead-in into, you know, not asking any sensitive IP-related questions, but for Fermata Energy's, you know, technology, maybe you could describe it or detail what is Fermata Energy's technology and kind of what role do you think you guys will be responsible for that? You described it as V2X, so vehicle to X or vehicle to everything, you know, let's say in the next decade. So where do you see Fermata, you know, playing a role in this and how do we get there? And then I guess maybe as a piggyback to that is where do you see things in 2034 and beyond?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And you know, my crystal ball isn't perfect, but... As you noted, I have had a bit of a track record of kind of looking around the corner and seeing opportunities and helping to support those transitions. Yeah, so Fermata Energy, so vehicle to X means vehicle to grid, vehicle to home, vehicle to building. So a vehicle, if the power goes out, you can use your EV to power your home during an outage. So there's all these different applications of using an EV battery to provide different value and different services. So that's what Fermata Energy is focused on. And back when they first started, they were looking around, looking at what was available in terms of technology. And one of the first electric vehicles that was introduced in North America was the Nissan Leaf, which is a all-electric battery EV from Nissan Corporation. And that vehicle has been bidirectional since, I think, 2013. So Fermata Energy, they identified the Nissan Leaf as an EV that was bidirectional capable. But then they looked around and there were no bidirectional chargers available on the market. So our founder, David Slesky and John Wheeler, they acquired a company that was designing inverters for microgrid systems. And they commissioned that company, they actually acquired the company and commissioned the company to build the first bidirectional charger. That was called our FE15, the bidirectional charger. So the FE15 bidirectional charging station with the Nissan Leaf was able to demonstrate the capability of taking energy in an EV that's stored and sending it back to buildings and sending it back to the grid. And since the FE15, we have our next gen FE20, and we've deployed, again, several dozen of these across the country. And we've been using them primarily to generate value at commercial buildings. There's this particular way that commercial customers are charged for electricity. Part of their bill is based on the demand, how much they use at any given moment in the month. And so we use the battery in an EV to reduce the peak demand on the building and therefore reduce the electric bill for the building, actually creating real value for the building owner. And we've demonstrated you can save $2,000-$4,000 a year using one Nissan Leaf and one of our FE15 bidirectional chargers. And so our business model is evolving because now in the past couple of years, we've seen a lot of automakers, not just Nissan, but many other automakers have committed to making their electric vehicles bidirectional. So you've already referenced the Ford F-150. That is a bidirectional car, and that's only works when the grid is down. So that's kind of an off-grid bidirectional emergency power. But then numerous other EV manufacturers, including General Motors, including Tesla, including Kia and Hyundai, they've all committed and publicly stated that their EVs will be bidirectional, not only vehicle to building for emergency, but vehicle to grid to provide those valuable services that we're going to require as we transition to a renewable grid where we're using more solar and wind that's variable. You're going to have a lot more storage on the system to support that future. So that's what really Fermata Energy is now building our platform. It's an AI-informed platform that manages the EV charging. It understands what the value of energy is on the grid at any particular moment. It understands the driving behavior and the battery state of health, and it manages all that. It optimizes to provide value to the grid, to provide value to building owners and to homeowners. So we are really building the technology, the platform that's going to allow EVs to become a more ubiquitous and important part of the electric grid. And it really is the ultimate manifestation of this decentralized distributed grid. You've got batteries in your garage and parking lots, and that's going to give you more flexibility to buy and sell energy to your advantage. And so it really is an exciting opportunity, and the technology is here. There's still a lot of you know, issues and regulatory challenges to face. But I'm quite confident that, you know, as you said, in the next 10 years that we will see more and more homes and businesses with bidirectional chargers and EVs creating value for the grid, for homeowners, for building owners. And ultimately what that does is that reduces the cost of the EV. As I noted, our Nissan Leaf, we can save $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a year. Basically, you can essentially cover the car payment based on the value that you're creating by having that bidirectional capability. So it really does promote EV adoption, and it promotes a more reliable and efficient grid.
Gosh, yeah, I can see. I mean, the value prop is huge. Like the ROI is pretty easy math where you go, hey, you own a large building, and I'm sure it's at scale too. You have one Carbon Leaf that's providing X amount. And if you have a parking lot of 30 or 40 or, you know, and I won't say leaves, but Carbon Leafs, Nissan Leafs, as well as, like you said, there's the Teslas, and I don't know if Rivian and others are behind that, but I have a naive question. If you own an existing EV and it's not bidirectional, are there any converters, anything a consumer can do, or it has to be manufactured as a bidirectional EV?
Yeah. I think there are some folks that, have kind of what they call hacked their EVs and been able to use it to power the home in an outage, or, you know, use it to provide power at a campsite. So there's a vehicle to load, vehicle to building, you know, emergency power. But generally, you know, I would advise against doing that. We're already seeing cars that have bidirectional capabilities. I believe Rivian is committed to this as well, where you can, you know, use your truck to power your work site. You know, if you're a contractor and you've got a work site and you need power for your power tools, you can use your truck to do that. But I think the biggest value and opportunity is having that vehicle to grid, where the battery can actually be part of the electric grid, providing services that the grid needs to maintain reliability.
Yeah.
And make it more efficient and more cost effective for everyone. And that's really what Fermata Energy is focused on. I often like to use the analogy, you know, if you think about, you know, the Ubers or Airbnb, Uber obviously developed a platform. And then, you know, for people that have, you know, a car and they not using it on the weekend, then they say, you know, I'm going to make some extra money and I'll drive people from the airport to their hotels on the weekends and I'll make some extra money. So it's the same kind of concept as we're developing a platform that's going to allow consumers who own an EV when they're not using it to decide whether or not they want to make that EV available depending on the value that they can generate. And it's really kind of an extension of the sharing economy where the EV becomes an asset.
Yeah.
You can choose to use that asset to generate value or revenue, you know, based on kind of the information that our platform provides about this is what the utility be willing to pay you if you were to plug in and make your EV available, you know, particularly during the evening hours when the grid is most stressed, when people come home from work and our grid is stressed, the prices go up. And so you could actually generate significant value. And the other thing is, you know, this vehicle to grid is happening exactly at the same time the grid is transitioning to renewable energy. In California, there are days when most of the energy that's being consumed on the grid is solar energy. And in fact, some of that solar energy, there's so much solar energy that they have to like dump it, what they call in the industry, curtail it. If we have all these EVs that are smart and are connected with our technology, we can manage and use that excess solar energy and store it for later in the evening when the sun goes down and the price of energy goes up. And so there really is this synergistic relationship between a renewable energy production and having V2X storage across the distribution system. And it really, I believe, is I often say it's the killer application for allowing us to fully decarbonize our grid, basing it on renewable sources of generation, again, requiring massive amounts of energy storage, which vehicle to grid can provide.
This is fascinating. And especially like you alluded to earlier in the episode where, you know, 95, 96% of the time we're not driving our vehicle. We're not using it. So let's put it to good use in those times. And like you said, share with the community. And if like folks like you and I, I'm sitting at home at 6 o'clock, you know, when folks are sitting in rush hour traffic on the way home, well, great. I can maybe contribute back to that and help reduce costs and help provide storage when the sun is not shining or when the wind is not blowing. So yeah, this is amazing. I want to be protective. I've got like a page and a half of notes. I really obtained a ton of value from this. And I know our audience will as well. I definitely think there's more to uncover and more to talk about. If you're up for maybe coming coming back in, you know, 6 months or something, and we can take a deeper dive into some other topics. But it sounds like, you know, again, you said your crystal ball is not 100% accurate, but it sounds like at the very least you're optimistic about the future, which is reassuring to folks like me, because you're in the know, you see this all day, every day, and you kind of see where we're going. And it sounds like, yes, we have obstacles, we have challenges. You had mentioned regulatory challenges. We've got, you know, possibly political disruptions or challenges. We've got the infrastructure itself, and there's a whole slew of things. But with sharp people like yourself working to solve complex problems, it gives me the ability to sleep at night knowing, hey, we're moving in the right direction. My kids are 11 and 9, and so hopefully they're going to have a brighter future than what we did. And like you said, you know, dirty energy coal, you know, was 50% 30 years ago or something, and that number is decreasing, and hopefully we'll continue to do so. I think this is a great jumping off point. If you have any final words, please let me know, and then maybe we can wrap up. And like I said, would love to have an open invite for you to come back in the future.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I'd love to come back. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share kind of this exciting technology and this trajectory. And I really see, you know, vehicle to grid as this ultimate manifestation of a distributed grid. And it really is, it puts control in the hands of consumers. It's democratizing energy. If I've got a large, you know, reservoir in my garage that I can use to manage my costs, to decide whether I want to use clean energy or dirty energy, it really does create this incredible empowerment for consumers to take control and charge of their energy situation. And again, really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today, Adam, and be happy to come back at some point in the future. So thank you.
Excellent. Well, that will happen then. Thank you again, Dr. Letender, for all the important work you're doing. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to help share with us and the community. And we'll let you go from here. And enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Thanks, Adam. You too now.
Thanks for listening to the Renewables Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.